All right, let's do it.
All right. Well, Barbara, let's start as basic as we can. Who are you and what do? And where do you do it?
My name is Barbara Barreto. I'm the principal of a pre-K through 8th grade Catholic school in Los Angeles, California. We're a multicultural school with 63% of my students living at or below the poverty level.
Wow. Okay. And tell me more about your school. What do you do?
Well, in the private sector, when you're a principal, you wear almost every hat there is to wear. My strength is curriculum, and so I spend a lot of time developing curriculum, supporting the teachers, providing professional development. And most recently, as we reviewed our mission statement, about 5 years ago, we had written a new mission statement that said that we educated students for the 21st century. And so a couple of years ago, I asked the faculty and staff a question. I said, you know, we said this and it sounds really good. We educate students for the 21st century, but what does that mean? How is educating students for the 21st century different than educating students for the 20th century? And that was really the question that got us started on a whole movement towards integrating technology within our school. And we started last year with an academy approach to education, and our junior high academy is called the Junior High Information and Technology Preparatory Academy. And since that time, we've rewritten our mission statement, and now our mission statement says that the mission of St. Elizabeth School Learning Academies is to provide an excellent academic and spiritual foundation that will empower the students to be moral and responsible citizens who effectively apply technology as a tool of learning and as a means to actively participate in the global community.
Wow. What does that look like on a day-to-day basis?
Well, on a day-to-day basis, it takes on varying aspects. Last year, as I said, was our first year moving forward with our academy model. And so last year was a year when we reached out in terms of technology, particularly at the junior high level. Our vision was that at the intermediate level, we would incorporate teaching basic productivity tools and some internet safety and internet searching capabilities so that when the students hit the junior high level, which for us is 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, they would be ready to actively employ technology in the classroom. And so the middle grades were concentrating on those skills, while in our junior high we made our first international outreach last year. We did a project called Photo a Day for Schools, and we were it was a Flickr project where we were posting photographs and we were in communication with schools on three different continents. And that was our And so we were doing that while at the same time giving professional development to the teachers and looking for ways to integrate technology.
Wow.
Then during that time, in my conversation with Clarence Fisher from Snow Lake, Manitoba, Canada, we began looking at how can we completely change the model of education. And that gave birth to the Thin Walls project that we're working on now, where we have one class in two locations.
And let's talk more about that. What does Thin Walls look like on a day-to-day basis?
Well, the concept behind Thin Walls is that we would take our 8th grade class and his 8th grade class, or actually it's a 7th, 8th combination where he lives because it's a rural section of Canada, and we would create one classroom where the kids would have ubiquitous access to each other, the teachers would plan together, and for that turned out to be quite a big project because I have three junior high teachers because we're departmentalized. So I have a math science teacher, a language arts teacher, and a social studies religion teacher. And, of course, Clarence has a self-contained classroom. So it kind of has two components to it. One is creating ongoing and ubiquitous communication between the teachers so that they can co-plan units and still address all of their standards. And the other was creating channels of ubiquitous communication for the students. We started out by taking some specific projects. We knew that we couldn't do every subject every day. That was going to be impossible. We had to deal with time differences. We had to deal with different standards. And so we decided that we would focus on specific subject areas one at a time. So, for example, one of the things that they did was they read the book, The Outsiders. Both classrooms read the book. And instead of having an inside your classroom literature circle, the literature circle was outside of the walls of the classroom and incorporated both classrooms. They worked on projects on the books together. They've done social studies work together. But it hasn't been easy. There's been a big learning curve. Even finding the best way for the students to communicate has been a challenge.
And I want to ask you more about that in a minute, but let's talk about the teachers talking together ubiquitously. What does that look like?
It's a slow process.
Sure.
And it's something that we are trying to learn how to do better. We set up a Moodle site because our school already had a Moodle site that we'd been playing with. So we have a Moodle forum for Thin Walls where the teachers are able to post ideas and where they're able to communicate and work out lesson plans if they're not able to communicate in real time. We also have used Skype, both Skype chat and Skype calls in order to have a conference to discuss the direction. In fact, we're planning one in the next few days here to kind of take a look at what we've done and where we're going to go for the rest of the semester. One of the challenges that the teachers have encountered is it's really hard to let go of what you like to do in your classroom with your kids. It's hard to think outside of the walls of your classroom, and it means letting go of some things to do that. It means looking at bigger pictures. It's not about the content as much as it is about the skills. For example, one of the things that we're going to talk about right now, there's been I received recently a copy of the Best of Educational Leadership from 2006-2007, and it's a great little magazine because even though I get the magazine Educational Leadership, I don't often get to go through it, and so by pulling out the best articles, it was really helpful. But they have an article called Becoming Citizens of the World. And in that, they list three specific things that define global competence. One of those is world knowledge, the other is language skills, and the other is civic values. And in world knowledge, they talk about the fact that, yes, in our schools, maybe we teach about different cultures, and we teach about customs, and we teach about festivals, but we need to get way beyond that. We need to dig much deeper in terms of world knowledge. We need to understand global trends in science and in technology. We need to create international connections. We need to understand about the global economy. And so hopefully moving forward, that is going to be one of the things that drives the lessons. It's not so much about what books we read or what we're studying in social studies as it is building that kind of global knowledge with the students in Canada. And the same with the civics values piece. In this case, we all speak the same language, which was a good place for us to start a project like this. But in terms of civic values, we want to focus some on, or hopefully we'll be able to focus some on developing critical thinking skills and service learning and try to find issues that are both important locally but that are important internationally where the students can come together to look for creative solutions.
Okay. And you've talked a lot about the what's. Let's talk a little about the why. Why is this so important? Why the Thin Walls Project? Why international conversation? Why are these important?
That's a difficult question to answer only because so many of the answers are, they've been stated so many times that they almost are beginning to sound like cliches.
Sure.
That this is the world of the future, that our students need to have skills that are going to be applicable worldwide. They need to have a wider view of the world. They need to learn how to collaborate with people all over the world are the common kinds of things that you see in a list of why we need those things. But those things are coming to us from the workplace. Those ideas are the ideas that are coming down to us from industry. And I'm sure in the Clarence's case and in my case, Clarence living in a rural area and my children coming from multicultural backgrounds with limited means, their worldview, even though we live in Los Angeles, is very, very limited. And so one reason to do thin walls is to increase their worldview. But I think even more importantly, it's because it empowers them as learners to understand that learning is not something that just happens at school within the 8-to-3 confines. And we're empowering them to use technology as a means of learning, not just as a social network or a place where they play video games, but actually something that can make a difference in changing their lives. That anything they want to learn, they can learn if they know how to use the tools properly.
Okay, that's a great place to start asking you about the students and their communications. You said that one of the goals of the Thin Walls Project is that your students are talking ubiquitously to each other. What does that look like?
It's been an interesting journey because we do not have one-to-one computing in either one of our schools.
Okay.
Our students, when we reorganized our school into learning academies, we moved the junior high into the building with the computer lab so that they would have more ubiquitous access to the computer lab. But they don't have one-to-one.
And what do they have? You have one lab for your entire junior high?
I have one lab for the entire junior high, that's correct. And then each teacher has a laptop computer in their classroom.
Okay, so we're talking how many kids to how many computers?
Like 90 kids to 30 computers.
Okay, all right. And how often do your teachers spend time in the lab then?
Well, I'd say the 8th grade, which is involved in the Thin Walls Project, by far spends the most time in the lab.
Every day?
Maybe 2 or 3 times a week. We're relying on them, though, to also carry this outside of the classroom. Interestingly enough, all of the kids in the junior high have internet access at home. And part of that is because we've done an education campaign with our parents that this is vitally important for their students.
Okay.
That they really need to have a computer and to have access to the internet. And the parents have bought into that. They see the importance of that for their students, especially the 8th graders who are going off to high school who are going to need it even that much more. But back to the question of ubiquitous access.
Yeah.
The issue in the beginning, it was very interesting because we were looking for channels of communication. We tried the Moodle forum, and forums didn't work for them. We had some technical issues. We eventually, we tried some, what else did we try? I'm trying to remember. We tried a whole lot of things, but I do know what solution we came up with, which was very interesting. We are employing IMing with the students.
Okay.
It was kind of a difficult decision because it gives the students some freedom that some people might not be comfortable with giving them. But we felt that it was the technology that they were most comfortable with. They all had it. And we set down some ground rules. One of the ground rules that we put in place was that they had to give us the transcript of their IM session. They had to email it both to Clarence and to our teachers here so that we had a regular transcript. Now, we did have some problems with IMing because it turned out that our students were using one platform. I've forgotten which one they were using now, whether it was Yahoo or MSN, and the students in Canada were using a different platform. And we tried Mebo and some other solutions, and they couldn't make it happen. And so now where we are is they all have Skype accounts. And they were pretty excited about that because that meant that they could do their chat sessions, but they also could have voice communication.
And are they using the voice?
Not completely yet. I think that we're going to see them use it a lot more in the second semester. But I will say, I want to say something interesting about IMing in the class.
Yeah.
We had, they were working on their project for the outsiders, and we had them divided into groups, basically two kids from here and two kids from Canada, and they were having their discussions and planning their project through IMs, which we were getting transcripts of. And I actually wrote a blog post about this, and it was the most fascinating experience because it gave us a view into the students' thinking and their collaborative skills that I never could have had without using IMing. Because in a regular classroom, as a classroom teacher, which I taught junior high for a number of years, you know, I did lots of collaborative projects. And as a classroom teacher, you walk around the room and you kind of listen in as the kids are planning and you give them a little direction. But you can only be there for a limited amount of time because you've got to move to the next group. And so you don't really have a window on what's going on in that group. And when they begin giving us transcripts of their chats, and often these chats were completed at home, which I never would have had access to, we began to see how they worked together, what their communication skills were, what their planning skills were, and we could even intervene and sit down and talk with the students and say, look, when you're going to work collaboratively, you have to be a better listener. You can't just railroad your ideas. You know, is everybody equally contributing? Are we respecting each other? Are you planning properly? And it was a tremendous learning experience.
And what are the kids learning about that?
What are the kids learning about that?
Yeah. I mean,
well,
go ahead.
Go ahead. No, restate the question. That's all right.
Well, you said that it was a really interesting for you to sort of comb through, I'm guessing, basically all of their reflective and purposeful and even some social talk. What are they noticing about what they're talking about or how they're planning or how they're working together? Or are they?
They are learning to plan and work together. They are learning to listen to each other. At the eighth grade level, they still need the guidance of and mentoring of their teachers, and that's very, very obvious. But I think in their reflective work after this, and I don't have any copies of it with me, I'm sorry, but they did indicate, you know, that they learned some things about exactly that, being a collaborator, about listening and working with other people. So if that's all we accomplished a lot. Because, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, one of the things that we hear all the time from the workplace is that the one thing that the students need that they're not learning in school is how to be part of a team.
Mm-hmm. Do you think your students have sacrificed content knowledge for this practical planning knowledge?
Have they sacrificed content knowledge? I'm not sure that that's a fair question today, and the reason is because I think that we have to completely change our mindset about what content knowledge is essential. So if we compare it to the old model of school, which was, you know, facts in, facts out, then yes, maybe. They haven't memorized as many facts. But because we're teaching them how to access information, we're teaching them also, which I haven't talked about, but we're working on teaching them how to validate information. I believe that they know now where to find the facts. And so I think the thinking skills are more important. I think thinking skills and communication skills are really the key components of education for the 21st century.
So you'd say your students aren't losing out by spending time on this work?
Exactly. I'd say that they're gaining a lot.
Okay. Well, thank you. Did you want to say any more about how the students talk to one another? It sounds like IM is a frequent individual contribution. Do the classes ever talk to each other as a whole? How does that look?
We have had a couple of Skype conversations. In fact, we've actually done group reporting through video Skype calls where the students actually get up and make presentations to each other. So, yes, we have done that. And we've done voice threads together. That's another tool that we've used. In fact, we used that also in the beginning of a year as a way to introduce themselves to each other and to learn a little bit about where they live and who they are. Mm-hmm. We've had the teachers talk to both classes through Skype video calls. And we've done some modeling. We did some modeling early in the year, just like you would in a normal classroom, except we did it through Skype so that both classes were receiving the modeling and the two teachers were working through an assignment so that they would see what it would look like.
Okay. Do you think, and this is a devil's advocate question, do you think your students are engaging in this work, and it sounds like you feel they're pretty excited about it. Do you think they're engaging in it because it's novel right now, or has it become sort of what they do as students?
It's novel, certainly is part of the equation, but I think they're beginning to see it just as part and parcel of everyday life. This is the way we teach. When students come back who have already graduated from our school, they look at what they're doing and they're going, wow, I wish we had had the opportunity to do this. For our students, we have the same problems that you have in any classroom. You know, you're always going to have some students who go over and beyond and some students who don't quite meet the standards that you would set for them. So I guess the answer is for them, this is just the way we do school.
And they're okay with that, you think?
Oh, yeah. They're definitely okay with it.
Have there been any kids resistant to the technology or stuck on the technology, not able to move past it? Or
they get frustrated when we have technology glitches, like when we couldn't find a way for the IMing to work. That was really frustrating to them. No, the thing that they get stuck on is the fact that we are making them think and that we're making them do creative projects and then we're not just telling them what's going to be on the test and letting them memorize it.
I think any teacher would be happy if that's where the kids were stuck.
Yeah, it's a happy problem, but it means we have to work really hard.
Sure, sure. Okay. I'm just taking a look at our questions. Do you think this project works locally, or do you need an international connection to have a true thin walls classroom? Could you have a thin walls classroom with a school down the street?
You could have a thin walls classroom with a school down the street, but I'm not sure that it would accomplish the same thing.
Similar.
Because you are looking at a school that's probably going to be demographically and culturally the same as you are. And I think that the whole point is to teach them to be globally aware, to communicate with people who have different life experiences than they do, and to work together towards an end project. And if you, I mean, maybe across the country, mm-hmm. but even last year when we did the Photo a Day project, it was amazing how much that broadened the students' understanding of the world. For example, we had a school from Australia who was part of our Flickr Photo a Day project, and they were posting pictures, and their kids were in the swimming pool. And it was December, and my seventh graders, the eighth graders who are now involved in Thin Walls, are the ones who did that project, and they were flabbergasted. I mean, it just, they were like, they couldn't understand, even though they had been taught, you know, the differences in the, in, you know, southern and northern hemisphere, the whole reality for them, the whole experience of working with people from different cultures was quite an eye-opener. And to understand the differences was a good experience for them.
Okay, so the distance is a good thing.
Yeah, distance is a great thing.
And I remember the first time I realized that Australian Christmas is a beach holiday.
Right.
Yeah, blew my mind a little bit.
Two other examples that last year we also did a Skype call. The same class did a Skype conference call with Jeff Utak's school in Shanghai, China. And my students had to come back at 5 in the evening to make that call, which was morning in China. And I quote this all the time, but it just is one of those things that really sticks with you. When the kids wrote a reflection about their experience afterwards, one of the students wrote, "It was like we were in the future because it was tomorrow there." How can you replace experiences like that?
Yeah, I know what you mean. So we've talked a lot about the tools. Instant messaging, Skype I heard, VoiceThread. I know you use wikis in your work some. Is that right?
Yeah, we use wikis and blogs.
Okay, so blogs. Does every student blog on their own then, or do they blog together, or yes?
Every student has their own blog. And so it's we've set up on EduBlogs. We have a Thin Walls blog, and then every student has their own blog in that hierarchy there.
Okay. And is everything they write public then?
For the most part, yes. I mean, certainly there's still writing that goes on in the classrooms.
Okay.
But
so
go ahead.
On paper?
Yes.
Okay. All right. But most
old
of their... Yeah.
Old habits die hard.
Sure. Sure. I'm an English teacher. I like writer's notebooks. I have no problem with those being offline. So the wiki, the blog, the Skype, the VoiceThread, sounds like there's some video involved in some of your Skype conversations. Are there any other essential internet tools that you guys use in your work?
You know, I wrote an answer to that question, and I'm trying to think. Well, we use Moodle.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, we've been semi-successful using Moodle, but it's something that I think is certainly a viable tool. There's just a large learning curve with Moodle. I think that those are the primary, well, you know, Google Docs and things like that also are all available to the students. A lot of this productivity technology, though, is new to the students. Despite the discussion about digital immigrant, digital native, when it comes to using technology as a tool of learning, the students aren't well versed in the tools.
Does this project help with that, or is it not really a focus?
It's not the focus, but it certainly helps with it because they have no choice but to jump in and swim.
Okay. So it's not really an obstacle so much as it's a new experience and an opportunity to learn.
That's right, but it also means that the number of tools we use is somewhat limited because they're still learning the tools right along with the teachers.
Okay. Makes sense. And let's shift back to your teachers and to you. What sorts of tools do you use in your learning?
Blogs, wikis, Skype, calls like this. For example, at the beginning of the year, like I said, one of my roles is professional development for my staff. We had video conference presentations by Darren Kripatwa from Canada. did a video presentation at the beginning of school. Clarence did a presentation for my students at the beginning, for my teachers at the beginning of school. K-12 online, professional conferences. I don't use too much social bookmarking, RSS feeds, of course, so that I can keep on top of both educational news and the blogs from the edublogosphere.
Do you see yourself as a learner? Do you see that as part of your job?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm learning all the time. And I have to stay ahead of the curve because my teachers, you know, we don't have the luxury of having very much prep time for the teachers, and I don't have the luxury of having a full IT department. So really, all the IT training is myself, and I have another person who is tech savvy, and we do all of the training ourselves.
And do you think your teachers see themselves as learners?
I think more and more every year they're learning that they are still learners.
How do they feel when they learn that?
You know, they're an incredible bunch of people. They really are. They have just been incredibly open to all of the things that I have been bringing to them. So I think that they're excited about learning. And, you know, I have to say this just because I think it's worth noting. The homeroom teacher for 8th grade, Lucy Martin, is the oldest teacher on my staff. And she has jumped into technology with both feet. And this is her second career.
Wow. What caused her to jump?
She got the vision. She got the vision. I took 5 members of my staff to NECC when it was in San Diego 2 years ago, and we participated in the ISTE Institute. She also had an opportunity to hear Alan November speak. And I also have my staff, one of the things that I started requiring last year is that they read. They aren't comfortable writing blogs, but I require them to read blogs. And at our faculty meetings every week, they talk about what they've read. And it just got the ball rolling.
I want to ask you a little more about that. How much time in your faculty meeting do you devote to their reading and their learning?
Well, this year, I set up a rotating schedule. We have faculty meetings every Wednesday afternoon from 1 to 3:30. We have early dismissal days.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have a lot of time for our faculty meetings, and 99% of that is devoted to curriculum development. We do very little business at our faculty meetings. If I can write it, I put it in writing. We only talk about business that there's no other way to get through it. So we spend a lot of time on their own learning. Sometimes it's presentation format. Sometimes it's looking at student work. But one of the things that I built in this year is at least once a month we have a technology playground where the whole time is dedicated to them playing with technology tools.
How does that go over?
It's great. They love it. They love it.
Okay.
Because you have to use it. You know, I can present the coolest tools in the world, but until you've had a chance to play with it, do something with it, you don't get it.
And do you see that that time well invested then? Is it resulting in changes in the school?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, as with all change, you know, I'm a visionary and I have a big vision and I know where I want to go. And so sometimes the amount of time it takes to get there is frustrating. But I have to say they have done incredible things in the last 2 years. And this is from a staff where some of them didn't even know how to turn on a computer.
And that time's made a difference then?
It has. It has.
Great. Great. Well, the focus of Learning 2.0, A Colorado Conversation, is on conversation. Fancy that. We've talked a little about some of the professional conversations that you're involved in, how your teachers are conversing with Clarence on a regular basis, how you value conferences, how you value blogs. What other sorts of professional conversations do you think are really important for schools right now?
All right, hold on just one moment because I really put some thought into that and I want to pull up some of my notes on that.
Great, great.
Okay, go from here. I think that is, I will say this while I'm pulling up my Google Docs here, that one of the things that I experience as an administrator is there are so many things to juggle. And when we start talking about new ways of doing school and new ways of learning, I found that it changes everything about school. So, for example, we've had a whole conversation recently about assessment. What is it that we're really assessing? What do grades really mean? And in our primary grades, K-1 and 2, we've gone to a standards-based report card that deals with mastery. And it's a completely different way of looking at assessment. And that really came out of our conversations about what learning, teaching and learning for the 21st century mean. And besides looking at looking at how we grade, also then has to do with how do we test? What do we test? So there are a lot of conversations that have to be going on all at the same time. But I think the essential conversation is re-envisioning teaching and learning. We need to become comfortable with the tools. So we do need to talk about the tools, and we need to discover what works best. But in the end, the conversation has to be about the big picture, and the tools need to become transparent. It's really a whole different way of learning. I don't know how to explain it. I'm working on this here. The conversation has to be about what is essential learning for students today. Is it memorizing the states and capitals? Or is it being familiar with the states and capitals and learning how to use that information to do creative, collaborative, innovative problem solving? Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. And it sounds like I know where you have fallen on the answer to that question.
Is it that transparent?
Well, yeah, but it's intentionally so. So how did teachers, how do administrators, how do school board members, how does Joe Public on the street, how do we get involved in those types of conversations? How do we foster that conversation?
That's a difficult question. Certainly the educational blogosphere is an important source of information in that conversation, and I think that parents and administrators and superintendents should be reading that, but I also recognize that that's only a small group of educators. And so I think that Carl Fish's video, the Did You Know video that invites people to talk to their school boards and talk to their principals, is really important. I think that we need the leadership on board, and I think that one of the places we have to start is we have to work with the universities to change the teacher preparation programs. I think that's an important part of the conversation. I have a teacher right now who's working on their credential and their master's program, and they came to me and they said, why, for part of this program, do I have to spend all my time memorizing useless facts when we know that that's not what education is about?
What was your answer?
I said it's a good question.
Fair enough. So you think blogs are a good place to start? You think just seeking out resources like Carl's video is a good place to start? What else? Anything else?
I think that those who are doing this need to try to find ways to publicize it. I think that we need to get these conversations into the mainstream media in whatever way we can do that. I know that in a couple years, NEC is going to be in Washington, D.C. I think that's going to be very important.
So we need to bring some politicians into our learning communities then? Maybe a Thin Walls Washington?
Yes, we do. We absolutely do. I mean, look at the presidential candidates. They recognize the power of the Internet and the need to communicate that way. And I think that we need to utilize all possible avenues of communication so that it does become something that is not just the purview of educators, but that's something that's being discussed publicly. And I think the best way to do that for myself as an administrator is to start with my own parents. I have a responsibility to them. I have to communicate to them what I'm doing, why I'm doing it, why it's important for their students, and I need to seek their input into how they view that. I also have a responsibility to communicate with my district. In my case, I'm part of the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, and I have a responsibility to the Archdiocese to communicate what I'm learning. The Archdiocese is really good about that. The new NET standards are up on their website, and they've given me the opportunity to speak to other principals about that, and I think that that's important, too.
What's been the response from some of your families and your parents? Are they supportive of what you're up to? Are they leery? What do they tell you when you talk to them about all this new stuff you're doing?
You know, they've been very, very supportive. And those who have had questions, we've taken the time, whether it was myself or the classroom teacher, to sit down with them, to talk to them about what we were doing, about safety protocols that they should employ. We actually had the students do a internet safety presentation for the parents.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very well received. And they, of course, the interesting thing was, this is kind of an anecdotal story, but it was kind of interesting. The students did a wonderful job on their presentations. They presented to all the classrooms. They did age-appropriate presentations for kindergarten up. They made brochures. They did everything you could think of. And then this was at the beginning of the year. Then they went on their blogs and promptly broke almost every rule that they had explained. And so we took them into the computer lab and we sat them down with their list of internet safety rules. And we had them evaluate their own blogs and the blogs of their classmates and then edit all of their blogs. And it was amazing because they could talk the talk, but until they saw it in action, they didn't understand it.
Did that cement the lesson?
It did. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Excellent. Very cool. Well, Barbara, I sure appreciate all your time. Is there anything else you think that you'd like for the folks attending Learning 2.0 to know or to think about or to do?
Well, since the theme of the conference is communication, I really do believe that the easiest way to move staff, to move administrators, is to get them involved in the conversation. And usually the best place to start is simply with reading, whether it's reading print articles like the one I talked about in educational leadership or reading in the educational blogosphere. If you can get people reading, you can get the conversation started. And the way that I did that for my faculty and staff is I set them up, I taught them about RSS, I set them up with an RSS reader. We're using Google Reader, but you can use any service you want to use. And I gave them three blogs to get started. I gave them Will Richardson's blog, I gave them David Warlick's blog, and I gave them four, and I gave them Jeff Utek's blog and my own blog. And I told them, I showed them, in fact, that every blog has on the side of it other blogs that they read. And so from there, I let them build their own, follow their own interests and find the voices that resonated for them. And I think that that was a critical tool in getting us moving.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, thank you, Barbara.
Well, you're welcome.
Is there any...
I enjoyed this.
Oh, yeah. And we're looking forward to talking with you on the day of the event.
Yes. I will look forward to that.
Excellent.